He has the horse, then. He tried to bluster out of it, but I described to him so exactly what his actions had been upon that morning that he is convinced that I was watching him. Of course, you observed the peculiarly square toes in the impressions, and that his own boots exactly corresponded to them. Again, of course, no subordinate would have dared to do such a thing. I described to him how, when according to his custom he was the first down, he perceived a strange horse wandering over the moor, how he went out to it, and his astonishment at recognizing from the white forehead which has given the favourite its name that chance had put in his power the only horse which could beat the one upon which he had put his money. Then I described how his first impulse had been to lead him back to King's Pyland, and how the devil had shown him how he could hide the horse until the race was over, and how he had led it back and concealed it at Mapleton. When I told him every detail, he gave it up and thought only of saving his own skin.
But his stables had been searched.
Oh, an old horse faker like him has many a dodge.
But are you not afraid to leave the horse in his power now that he has every interest in injuring it?
My dear fellow, he will guard it as the apple of his eye. He knows that his only hope of mercy is to produce it safe.
Colonel Ross did not impress me as a man who would be likely to show much mercy in any case.
The matter does not rest with Colonel Ross. I follow my own methods and tell as much or as little as I choose. That is the advantage of being unofficial. I don't know whether you observed it, Watson, but the Colonel's manner has been just a trifle cavalier to me. I am inclined now to have a little amusement at his expense. Say nothing to him about the horse.
Certainly not without your permission.
And of course this is all quite a minor point compared to the question of who killed John Straker.
And you will devote yourself to that?
On the contrary, we both go back to London by the night train.